Hey everyone, this is Nick Giffen. I just wanted to apologize for the audio quality on my end on this episode. I thought I had my microphone plugged in. Turns out it wasn't, so it was going through the built-in microphone in my computer. So bear with us there, and we'll get it right for next week. Let's get to the episode.
Welcome to the August 16th, 2017 edition of The Numbers Game. I'm your host, Nick Giffen. You can follow me on Twitter at RotoDoc. And with me, as always, Josh Hermsmeyer. You can follow him on Twitter at FriscoJosh. We've got a great show coming up for you today. We're going to have a little bit of a talk about David Johnson right off the bat here, and little, I guess, interesting news item that we saw today around him. So I want to discuss that a little bit. Then we're going to talk about the Air Yards Countdown finale that Josh posted last week at RotoViz. It's awesome. It's the top 24 wide receivers per his Air Yards model. So we're going to break down those top 24. We're going to look at some guys that are surprising relative to their ADP, whether it's overperforming or underperforming, and whether we should actually believe those numbers or not. And then the latter half of the show, we are going to talk about some tweets that Josh sent out earlier this week on Monday night about some of the new NFL data, things like cushion and separation for wide receivers, and just get his thoughts on that. But Josh, it sounds like you had a pretty fun weekend. How was it?
Oh, it was great, and I appreciate all the folks who tweeted at me some recommendations for Kansas City barbecue. Ended up going with Arthur Bryant, and it was absolutely delicious. I don't know if you're familiar or ever been. I think you said you had, or maybe you went to Joe's. Who knows anymore? My mind is mush. But there are pictures of, like, Obama and Carter, and I think Palin and McCain when they were running. So everyone goes to Arthur Bryant's when they come through Kansas City and enjoy that barbecue. One of the interesting things, I don't want to get too far in the weeds about barbecue. This is a numbers game pod, but it's super interesting. You know, you think of Kansas City barbecue, you think of a tomato-based sauce, you know, KC Masterpiece or what have you. Arthur Bryant's is a vinegar-based sauce, and they're the most famous and one of the oldest in Kansas. I think the first Kansas City barbecue restaurant. He took his recipe from the Carolinas, came to Kansas City, and started an institution, but it's not Kansas City barbecue sauce, which is kind of shocking to me. But yeah, I had a great time in Kansas City. Arrowhead is a fantabulous place to visit, and I couldn't have had a better time. Everyone there is super nice.
Yeah, the one question I had about that is, was Alex Smith on that, you know, Wall of Fame or anything like that?
Yeah, he was. He was in there, yeah.
Was he really? Oh, okay. So he's right up there with the Obamas and the Sarah Palins and the McCain's of the world. Good to know. He's revered there in Kansas City. But now let's get talking to football. We're going to do that, of course, after I remind you guys that you can get a listener's only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of our premium NFL content and also supports the pod. Also, you can support the pod by subscribing to and rating the RotoViz radio channel on iTunes. Do that and you'll be eligible to compete against some RotoViz podcasters and writers in a $35 entry best ball league hosted by our friends at the FFPC. The winner of each league will receive a year-long RotoViz pass on top of the cash prize, so go to iTunes, leave a review with your name in it, and email us at rotovizradio@gmail.com to let us know you want to be in the RotoViz league, and we'll definitely get that set up. And I just want to remind everybody, with that 30% discount, you get access to everything, all of our articles. We're posting tons and tons of articles per day right now as the season ramps up. We've got a lot of our best content coming out this kind of time of year, and we've got our draft lab running, which will let you do anything you need to do, customized projections, cheat sheets, optimized snake drafts. So a lot of good stuff going on at RotoViz. All right, Josh, I wanted to start with a little bit of a news item. I saw this on ESPN.com. I was kind of getting ready for about to do an auction mock. I think you're doing it too, right?
I'll be doing that tonight with you. Yep.
Yeah, so we're about to do a mock auction, and we'll write that up at RotoViz. But so I was flipped over to the ESPN website, you know, fantasy football website there, and I saw a little blurb, a little article there that had Matthew Berry pictured next to David Johnson. Apparently they were talking to each other. And the blurb item is, David Johnson predicts 30 touches per game. The Cardinals running back tells Matthew Berry he's only getting better and expects a monster season. 30 touches per game. You have to get excited about that, right, Josh?
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I think I buy it though, especially after what Arian said yesterday, just berating his entire receiving core. He said he's very unhappy with the wide receiver room, named only two of them, Jerron Brown and Larry Fitzgerald, as true NFL starters, omitting all the rest of the nine other guys in that room, apparently. And so, yeah, if you don't have wide receivers you can count on, you can use David Johnson as a wide receiver. The routes he ran last year and the depth of his targets were such that he can replace a slot wide receiver pretty adequately. And so 30 touches a game, if you're behind quite a bit, I could see him getting another 100 targets, if they can't rely on Smokey Brown this year because of sickle cell or injuries or what have you. So I'm not surprised that he would be thinking that at this point in time.
Yeah, so that's kind of what it is. It's a little bit of a two-part question there, because one, do you believe the news and the news that he could get 30 touches per game? I like to sometimes think athletes, they want to pump themselves up, I'm going to get 30 touches per game. I'm going to be a high contributor this year at whatever I do. You're going to see a monster season for me, blah 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 blah. And then, when the season actually gets going, maybe he only gets 24, 25, air quotes only, right? 24, 25 touches per game. But so I'm wondering how much of this is maybe a little exaggerated. You mentioned the Bruce Arians conference there, where he mentioned only Larry Fitzgerald and Jerron Brown. I wonder how much of that is a motivational tactic. But what I really wanted to talk to is, what is the added benefit to David Johnson increasing his touches per game to 30? Is it all good, or as you've shown, the injury guy, the guy who really dug in deep with serious injuries in the high leverage rounds? Is this a negative because of the added injury risk?
I think anytime you take a running back in the high leverage rounds, you're rolling the dice. But I don't think you want to look at increased volume and say that's a negative in any way, shape, or form. I think you just ride him on a points per game basis until he breaks. And you hope he doesn't break this year, or you hope he gets you through the playoffs, or whatever. But yeah, I mean, look, you assume the risk. And you want the payout to be volume, right? I mean, that's what you're betting on with a high leverage, a high round pick on a running back. And then you just hope that the injury bug doesn't strike. Now, to kind of frame this a little bit more, I mean, I'm not a man who believes very much in predicting injuries. I just think it's really, really difficult. Jason Rock Phelps over at Sports Injury Predictor has been doing some fine work using a regression model trying to predict games lost. He's found some actual stickiness and significance in a couple stats developed by Jeremy Funk, who we interviewed earlier in the year. And I found some similar things as Jeremy in seeing that DJ probably has less propensity to be injured than someone like, say, Le'Veon Bell, just based on their injury history, number of times on the injury report, etc. But even still, at the end of last year, he got injured and would have missed multiple games. It would have been a serious injury. If that occurs anytime in the first quarter of the season, you're probably sunk if you take David Johnson with the 101. So you're rolling the dice. But if I'm rolling the dice, give me 30 touches per game. Come on, give it to me.
Yeah, I mean, certainly you're rolling the dice, and maybe not even just the first quarter, but maybe the first half of the season. If he misses your fantasy playoffs, you're probably pretty sunk as well, unless you've been able to play the waiver wire pretty well and prepare for that potential catastrophe in the second half or in the fantasy playoffs. Have a contingency plan there in place. What I'm wondering is, what is the increased probability of risk? It's intuitive that the more times you're involved in a play, the sooner you're going to get injured. If I were to play football and play 5,000 plays in 1 year, and then play 50,000 plays in 1 year, I'm obviously exaggerating things. I think I'm more likely to get injured in 1 year if I try to do 50,000 plays in a year. So
Sure.
my point is, what is the benefit versus the risk? And I was trying to do a couple quick back of the napkin calculations. And let's say David Johnson gets one fantasy point per game, and he increases from 25 touches, one fantasy point per touch, I'm sorry. And he increases from 25 touches to 30 touches. So he's essentially increasing 5 fantasy points per game. These are all made up numbers and just back of the napkin calculations. Then over 16 games, he's getting 80 extra fantasy points. However, that, you know, that, and we're giving him 30 points a game. If he misses 3 points, three games, those 80 points are gone. Well, let's talk about replacement running back value. Let's say replacement running back value is 10 points per game. Then it's 20 points per game difference for every game David Johnson misses. If he misses four games, all of that added benefit is wiped out. So what is the increased probability he misses four games? You need to calculate that versus his, you know, all that. There's probably some optimal curve there because, you know, if I were to give David Johnson 50,000 touches in the first game, we'd be all really excited. But what if he just got injured that first game somewhere around touch, you know, 180 or whatever? You know, it's obviously a very contrived and ridiculous example I'm giving. But my point is, I think there's probably some kind of curve here where we can maybe assess risk versus reward. I understand if he makes it through, it's going to be a huge reward. And that's what we want. We want league winning reward. So you also have to factor in like essentially payout probability into this as well. It's not just strictly calculating, you know, the points per game that you're going to get in scenario A where he doesn't get injured, and the points per game you get in the probability that he does get injured and multiplying that and all that stuff. It really is, it's really actually an integration. But the idea is you also need to factor in the payout if he does, you know, if he does not get injured versus if he does get injured, what is the, what are you going to get paid out or how much are you going to lose and things like that. So it's not a simple, straightforward answer. But I'm not so sure it's 100% as clear cut as like, woohoo! Especially because you're already drafting him at 1.01. Most people are. This can't make us draft him any sooner. So that increases his value at that spot, but it doesn't, you know, it's not like he can go from the 1.06 now to the 1.05 or 4 or 3 based off that piece of news. So
sure.
It's both good and it's bad. It's certainly an interesting situation there. And
the one piece of information that I would just kind of throw in there to kind of maybe temper the negativity would be, you know, there's a reason why running backs have a higher injury rate than wide receivers. And if his touches come in the form of pass receptions, perhaps we can treat his injury rate as something on the, at least on those touches, as something closer to wide receivers than what we typically associate with running backs or running into defensive linemen and linebackers coming to take their heads off. So maybe if we're looking at a guy who's seeing that increase in touches because he's going to be a part of the receiving game, that kind of mitigates some of the concern for those added touches.
Well, I don't think my you know, concerns were necessarily going overboard. I was just trying to give an example and say we need to weigh all the probabilities here as well as the payout. So I definitely am not like panic. David Johnson's getting more volume. That's definitely not where I'm going with this. I'm kind of just trying to work through the numbers and figure out how much added benefit there is versus how much added risk there is to figure out where we are on that situation. I want to move over now to your air yards countdown. Just came out again last week. You did the top 24 in one fell swoop there. It's just so cool because this is literally the best wide receiver model in the fantasy football industry. A 0.66 R squared value on out of sample data. So for people who don't know what that means, you know, Josh has all this historical data. He took 20% of it or some ballpark number of 20% of it out of even consideration and built the model with the rest of the 80% of the data. Then he tested that model on the other 20% of the data, and the R squared value on that model is 0.66. That's incredibly high. And there's even some factors he could have added in there to increase a little further. He intentionally didn't include ADP because he wanted to see where the discrepancies versus ADP come. A final model could include ADP and increase that 0.66 even further, maybe pushing 0.7. I did the same thing last year. I did one without ADP and did one with ADP. It increased it from about 0.56 to just over 0.6. So I'm sure there's room to go. But what I wanted to do is really discuss these discrepancies in ADP. So just right from the top, we've got Odell Beckham Jr. comes at number one in your model, Julio Jones number two, and Antonio Brown three. So I wanted to talk about the big three right there off the bat. Antonio Brown comes in number three in your model at 18.9 predicted points per game. Odell Beckham number one. But Brown is actually going as the number one overall in ADP. Is there anything you make of it there, or are you always targeting Odell over Antonio Brown, or what do you think?
I think in this case, there's two things that are driving Odell's just slightly above Julio and AB, and it's age, and it's the fact that his TD rate is really, really high amongst that triumvirate. And I think also, though, that we need to be careful when you do these points per game models and you list them all. And you see how close these guys really are. We're talking about 19.4 points per game to 19 points per game to 18.9 points per game. These guys are equivalent for all intents and purposes. I just happen to like Odell Beckham because of his youth and the fact that the offensive weapons around him have increased. I don't think Eli is a guy who can't support a wide receiver one. I think that's silly. I think he absolutely can. He's done it in the past multiple years. And I think that he'll continue to target Odell, especially in high leverage situations around the red zone. So I really like Odell among those three, although there's been some really nice mutterings again this season about Julio Jones getting more red zone looks. So I'm not going to talk you out of either of those three guys if you have a firm belief in any of them.
Yeah, no, and that's not where I was getting at, was you have to follow the model strictly. I just want to talk about the discrepancy there between Odell Beckham and Antonio Brown in ADP versus the model. You're right, it definitely comes down to a preferential thing. I was trying to kind of dive into maybe your thoughts on that. What was the discrepancy? So I'm with you, though. I want to be on Odell Beckham there. I just love the fact that he's still coming into his prime and that he's still an elite wide receiver. That's not going to change. He is a big play wide receiver. All of them are, of course. I mean, we saw Julio Jones go for 300 yards in a game last year against the Panthers. They're all big play wide receivers. But I really think Odell is coming into his prime. They did add Brandon Marshall, which some people are viewing as a negative. I don't necessarily view that as a negative. I still think Odell's going to get his volume. It almost, if anything, could be a positive now that defenses have something else to worry about. We always get in that debate, like, is it hurt you to add another good player? Is it help you? I think my personal opinion in the case of Odell Beckham, with him coming into his prime, it's not going to hurt him at all. If anything, it might help him. So wanted to dive a little bit further there. Another interesting thing that I thought, between the model and ADP is Brandon Cooks. So if we go through there, Brandon Cooks comes in at number 8 by the model. Obviously, he's number 13 by ADP. And you pointed this out that, the model is blind to something. So talk about specifically the Brandon Cooks situation.
Sure. I mean, so the model incorporates within it, I think it's career efficiency of the quarterback that's throwing to the receiver. And it does that with depth adjusted yards over expectation, depth adjusted catch rate or completion rate over expectation. And so that's an important factor. I think the model weights it in ways that I'm not entirely completely understand. So my anticipation going in, just based on my own kind of analysis of those metrics, was that it would kind of do a regression to the mean calculation within it. And in fact, I find something that's actually the opposite of that. I find that the model likes wide receivers who have good quarterbacks, good in air quotes, but, by those metrics, throwing to them. And so, while Eli Manning has not been the greatest, he's been about league average, I think there's other factors that have bounced up Odell Beckham. But I think one of the things that that it really liked about Brandon Cooks was that Drew Brees, who is by far the most efficient quarterback, he's the most accurate quarterback in the league over his career, that's still playing, that he was throwing to him. And so with him gone, I really needed to bump him down. It's very subjective where I put him in my tiers. I mean, tier 2, I think he's where he belongs. Within that tier, I really couldn't say. In fact, where would you put him, Nick? It's really difficult once I get into the subjective part of it, because again, my whole philosophy is that just take a lot of them, right? Because you're not going to get the fine-grained, you're probably not going to get the fine-grained projection correct. But if you take a few of them within each tier, you stand a chance to lower your variance. But I would love to hear your thoughts on Cooks.
Yeah, I think Cooks in that tier 2 makes a lot of sense. Obviously you've got him and Julian Edelman both lumped right there in the tier 2, and I think it's really tough to choose between the two. I certainly think Cooks should probably, certainly probably, that almost makes no sense, but I think Cooks should be ahead of Julian Edelman as you have him there. I might personally drop Edelman down a little bit further, but it's such a tough thing to gauge because there's moving parts here. I mean, Brandon Cooks comes into a new team. How does that affect Edelman? Does that lower his volume? Does it lower Cooks' potential volume compared to what he had last year at the Saints? I don't know. So it's such a tough situation. My philosophy with Brandon Cooks is I take him if he falls beyond his ADP by pick or two, wide receiver pick or two, something like that. So I'm kind of just playing the market there, because when I use a zero RB strategy, I'm usually picking wide receivers in the high leverage rounds that I like, but occasionally they've all gone, and then I just have to go by ADP you know, which guys have fallen beyond their ADP and kind of play the value game there. I'm less concerned with which wide receivers I get than the structure around it, as we talked about many times on this show. Another one that I wanted to bring up here, which I think is very interesting. First of all, I'm mad that you ranked him ahead of Kenny Britt. But let's get that out of the way. But Tyrell Williams here, he's very interesting because he's wide receiver 41 by ADP. You ranked him ahead of Kenny Britt. The model doesn't rank him ahead of Kenny Britt, so I think I prefer the model here than you. But no, what I really wanted to get into is how fairly can we judge his year last year? Because Keenan Allen wasn't there. Right? Can we really expect last year's results to correlate as strongly with this year's results for Tyrell Williams as maybe some other players who aren't affected by personnel changes as much?
It's a fair point, but I think we discussed Tyrell Williams and Keenan Allen on a previous show, and really it comes down to what was our anticipation, what was our prior coming into this year before they selected the rookie Williams, I believe. There's so many Mike Williams in this league, I want to make sure I'm getting the name correct. But he's the one with the back problems who might come back in October. And when they selected him, we thought, my God, what are they doing? They're loaded at wide receiver. And I think as we go back and see that he's injured, I think I fall back on my prior that Tyrell Williams was good. And I am completely on board with the idea that Keenan Allen could be a wide receiver too. He's done it in the past. But I just, the error, like the model, for instance, put him at 71. It just doesn't know what to do with him.
But doesn't that increase Tyrell's error as well?
I would think it does. They are definitely correlated. But I would say this, you know, the model liked him enough, given the circumstances, which haven't changed too terribly much. I mean, he's still going to have to compete with a guy for targets, and he beat out Travis Benjamin, who at the beginning of the season was getting the lion's share of the PPR points. It wasn't until Travis Benjamin became the deep threat, the lightly targeted deep threat with the high ADOT, and Tyrell Williams became the possession receiver and mid ADOT guy that he actually started scoring. So the argument you would make is that that role won't be there for him this year and that he will turn once again into the field stretcher. I'm betting against that. I think you're going to have two really good possession receivers, or he'll slide into the slot, or Keenan Allen will slide into the slot, and that they'll continue to use Benjamin as that field stretcher. And, you know, if it's a high-volume offense, I think there'll be plenty of targets for Tyrell Williams. I'm fading Keenan Allen just because of the huge error. And so I think him at wide receiver 23 might be a reach. And I'm with you that Kenny Britt could potentially be better than him. But, again, Kenny Britt moves situations. That makes the error on his projection large as well. And that's why I have him lower.
All right. And one last guy here I wanted to talk about, DeAndre Hopkins. He's currently going as the wide receiver 12. So he's a wide receiver 1 in 12-team PPR leagues by ADP. Your model ranks him 23rd. You rank him in tier 3 and 22nd, wide receiver 22. Let's talk about him for a second.
Sure. So I don't think this one is actually, among sharp analysts, very surprising. I don't think there's very many guys who have taken a hard look at the Houston offense this year and come away saying that they've improved, especially at the quarterback situation, until and unless Watson gets his act together and becomes the type of quarterback that, you know, Brock wasn't and Savage isn't. But I don't see that yet. I've been watching very carefully the preseason, and while I'm not a scout, I have done some work in that area, and I can watch football just like everyone else. And you watch the two of them, and it's, you know, Watson isn't ripe yet. He's just not ready to take the reins. And if he did, I don't think he would be an improvement on Brock. I think what you'd see is a player who might help the offense, but I don't know that he would help DeAndre Hopkins. And I mean that he might help the offense because of his threat, his mobility, his overall athleticism. And then, you know, he has a decent arm, but he was highly erratic. Savage looked like a guy who could actually sit back in the pocket, deliver the ball according to the play design. That's what you need if you're betting on DeAndre Hopkins. The model didn't like Brock. I'm sure the model won't like Savage. So I was happy with where it put him, and I'm fine with him down there at 22.
Good stuff. I love it there. I mean, it's just such a cool model. I mean, it's literally... It really is the best wide receiver model for predicting season-long results in the fantasy football industry. Obviously, you can't predict injuries or things like that, but that's why it's cool. These things are shown on a points per game basis. There's a lot of other things that come into play as well, though. Even if you get an R-squared 0.7, there's still 0.3, you know, 30% of the variance the model can't explain. That's where we use our intuition, our knowledge, and all of that. And that's why you have to make some of these subjective calls. And that's why I wanted to go through some of them and talk about those. Really great stuff there, Josh. We're gonna talk more, of course, about some things, some work Josh has done. I mean, he's just cranking everything out lately. And we're going to talk about that in just a second.
Hey, RotoViz fans, I want to take a minute to tell you about our friends at the FFPC, who are celebrating their 10th year as the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. If you love the best ball format, the FFPC has you covered. The popular FFPC Draft Experts Leagues start at just a $35 entry fee and go up to $1,250 for the high rollers. Drafts are filling fast, so you won't have to wait long for your league to fill. As if that's not enough, the FFPC has introduced a brand new concept to season-long double-up best ball leagues with 100% payout. Yep, you heard that right, 100% payout. Simply draft in a $35 or $250 entry FFPC Draft Experts League, finish in the top half of the league at the end of the season, that's the top six teams, and you will double your entry fee for next year. Double-up leagues are the best deal in fantasy, so get on them and start drafting. Don't miss the FFPC experience. Go to myffpc.com and register now. That's myffpc.com. Join your fellow players today at the FFPC, the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football.
Okay, we are back. This is Nick Giffen alongside Josh Hermsmeyer. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, Josh kind of went on a little bit of a tweet storm. He does these things. We talked about it before, and they're really insightful. And this was Monday night. So we're recording this, of course, on a Tuesday afternoon, evening, Pacific time. But on Monday night, he was tweeting out a lot of the new NFL data. So you know, his first tweet that caught my attention was the NFL added time behind line of scrimmage for running backs. And I think I was actually even a tweet before that caught my eye. But basically, it's the new data. So excited after discovering cushion and separation on NFL.com. Only 1 year of data to work with, so can't test stickiness, part two, but can see how things correlate with one another. So talk about cushion and separation and just some of the correlations you found.
Yeah, I guess to avoid some of the confusion I myself experienced last night, kind of going through these stats, probably best to define what cushion is and then what separation is. Cushion is what it sounds like. It's how far off the cornerback is playing from the wide receiver when he's lined up on the line of scrimmage before the snap of the ball. And separation, however, is the distance between the average yardage between the wide receiver and the defender when the ball arrives on a targeted pass. So within his vicinity. I don't know how they determine whether it's, you know, high, low, left, right of the guy, but let's just for the sake of the argument say it is within, you know, a catch radius of 24 inches either side of the guy. So there we go. When the ball arrives at him, I was trying to look and see what that separation metric was actually correlating with. Like, did it correlate with targets? Did it correlate with yards, receiving yards? Did it correlate with catch rate? Anything like that? And there was a small positive. Well, actually, it wasn't small. It was a decent correlation with catch rate. So when a wide receiver is targeted and he has separation, he catches the ball. He tends to catch the ball more. The yard squared was 0.25. So that's fairly good. Not great, though, shockingly, because remember, these aren't like year-over-year stats we're talking about. When you do an R-squared study on in-season, same-season stats, you typically can get some very large R-squared. Like PPR points and receiving yards are like correlated at like a 0.8 R-squared. I mean, things like that where there's true relationship. If you want, you know, and like touchdowns and PPR points, highly correlated in-season, same-season. It's when you go to the next season that things either are or aren't sticky. Again, separation really doesn't explain a whole heck of a lot to do with catch rate. And
one thing I want to – can I jump in here? I just want to point out. That's league-wide, and I'd be really curious to see if it's a higher correlation for Aaron Rodgers versus Brock Osweiler, for example. You know what I'm saying, right?
Sure.
Yeah, so that's just one thing I was thinking about as you were talking.
Yeah, and I think what we could do is – because they do break it out by game – is I can scrape the game level data and then do correlations on the player level. And I think that would be worthwhile to do. It's something I definitely want to look at. This is just tiny baby steps into this NFL data. But so there is a positive correlation with catch rate, and then there's a strange negative correlation on actual targets. And I know you have a theory about it. I have a theory about it. I want to stipulate. I have no idea what's going on here. I literally have no idea. I think there's a problem with the way we're measuring separation, though. If it, remember, right away we know it's a target. So we've already eliminated all of the routes where players aren't targeted. And so we can't compare whether or not a guy who wasn't targeted or was targeted, you know, we have no way of knowing if there's a difference between those two. Like, were the guys that weren't targeted not targeted because they were covered? Or were they wide open too and we're just dealing with a bad quarterback? You know, things like that I think are really important, and we probably need a different separation metric, one that isn't counted just on targets, one that is measured from the point at which the quarterback releases the football, and we should have separation metrics for routes run, right, even when you're not targeted.
Definitely. I 100% agree with you there. And you know, you mentioned we each have some hypotheses. These could one or both or all or neither or even more than both if there's many things going on here could be right. But one of the things that I'm looking at here, so I'm looking at the graph, and on the x-axis is the separation. And again, these are separation when the player was targeted. The y-axis is number of targets. And as you mentioned, it's a negative correlation. The r-squared is 0.08, but obviously if you take the square root of that, that it's going to give you a negative number. So you know, negative times a negative is a positive. It's a negative correlation number. I don't have that number in front of me. I didn't do the calculation of square rooting 0.0876. But the idea is, when separation is about 1.9, and I believe this is yards, I would guess maybe Euclidean yards, I don't know. But it looks like there's somewhere between, you know, just over 100 targets as the like trend line average there at 1.9. I'm just wondering if that's distance related. Are more targets thrown shorter, and shorter targets tend to have less separation just because there's more bodies around, and then there's more targets deeper. But you know, that could be an explanation. One thing you mentioned, which I think is really cool, is because it's at the point of catch, you know, are they really only targeting when they're wide open? Are there closing rates? I mean, there's so many things going on. What was your hypothesis here?
Yeah, so when I also looked at air yards, what I found is an even stronger negative correlation. So that would suggest that one of two things. It would suggest that either guys that run downfield, by the time they get past a certain depth, are going to receive a tighter coverage. I don't know if that should hold in general. I don't know that that, you know, passes the smell test as a football fan. As, you know, you're a domain expert as well. Does that pass the smell test for you? Or it could be the case that because of the way separation is measured, by the time on a longer throw, the quarterback releases the ball and it finally gets in the vicinity of the receiver, the defender might have had time to close on the receiver. I mean, at that point, he may have, you know, recognized that the ball is going towards him, and that distance that perhaps looked so good to the quarterback before he released the ball that may have been a trigger for the target itself had closed, as you might expect, while the defender gets closer to the receiver. So I think both are reasonable explanations for something. And again, whenever we do these statistical studies and we're trying to, you know, piece out what these numbers mean, making the jump to causation is always fraught and difficult. And it's probably the last thing I want to do, especially since I've just taken a toe in the water this far.
Yeah, exactly. I just thought they were really cool correlations because some of them certainly seemed counterintuitive, and some of them definitely seemed very intuitive, like catch rate positively correlating with separation distance. You know, I know you're going to definitely look into this more. I know you. And if there's anything we can answer from it, I'm sure you'll definitely dig into that. One other thing that you mentioned, and this is what I started to talk about, was looks like NFL also added time behind the line of scrimmage for running backs. Surprise, surprise, Le'Veon Bell leads the NFL. Hashtag patience. That was my first thought. You know, there was a lot of narrative around, oh, I'm so tired of them saying patience or whatever, but we've got it in the numbers now that he does. And second was D'Angelo Williams. Is this a scheme thing? Is this a running back thing? Or what's going on here? Obviously, again, we can't really assign cause, but it's interesting to see both Le'Veon Bell and D'Angelo Williams 1 and 2 in time behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and I think Mark Mosher and some other folks were saying, well, you know, how nice to have a line that can give you that amount of time. I agree. But I don't think that, you know, just because you have a good line, that doesn't mean that you would necessarily be patient, or at least patient to the extent that both of those guys are. You know, there certainly must be something to do with the scheme here. You know, they're pulling tight ends sometimes, I remember. and to go along with pulling guards when Heath Miller was in there, he would do those kind of blocking schemes. And they take a little while to develop. But I think, though, that it really is capturing something that experts who watch Le'Veon Bell have said is true, which is that, hey, you know, he's a guy that waits, and then he gets the whole heart. And that's really cool that we find it in numbers. I think it's a super interesting way that we can use metrics, especially these advanced metrics the NFL has access to, or the data, raw data from Zebra, and come up with some things to kind of verify some of the narratives that are put out there by folks who watch the game.
Yeah, definitely. I'm 100% with you. I think it's so cool we have these numbers. And just to kind of wrap up this time behind the line of scrimmage thing, the screen capture that you got, there were 13 backs listed in there, so the top 13. And what I noticed is there were multiple pairs of backs. I mentioned Le'Veon Bell and D'Angelo Williams, but you also had Spencer Ware and Charcandrick West in the top 13. You also had Theo Riddick and Dwayne Washington in the top 13 as teammate pairs there. Obviously, some of those are going to occur by random chance. That's the nature of randomness. But I wonder if there's a schematic element. There's probably a lot of things that go into a single number, and that's also why boiling things down to a single number can sometimes be pretty difficult, because it doesn't really tell you the full story. What was his distribution? What are these distributions of time behind the line of scrimmage? What is the sample size and all of these? A lot of stuff to dig into, but even just these simple averages, these simple trends, these simple correlations are good to talk about because they really start helping us drill down further and further as we go along in time. So good work there, Josh, and great job again on your Air Yard series. That's going to do it for this edition of the Numbers Game. I am Nick Giffen. You can follow me on Twitter at RotoDoc. For Josh Hermsmeyer on Twitter at Frisco Josh. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Numbers Game, a sports analytics podcast powered by RotoViz Radio. Please review the podcast in iTunes under the established RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email, numbersgamepod@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter at numbersgamepod. Our theme music is provided by Black Ant. And remember, you can always support the podcast by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the Football Podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.